When you hear the phrase soft as steel, what do you think of? While the word steel might conjure up images such as massive high-rise buildings, where does the soft part come in? And what exactly does this mean in our work and in our lives? Welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast with your host, Dennis Duran, featuring engaging conversations with a wide range of industry leaders around soft skills, how we practice love, inclusion, social justice, and compassionate leadership that's everlasting in the workplace. And now, here's Dennis Duran.
My guest today is Alejandra Milky. Alejandra operates at the dynamic intersection of culture and leadership. As a seasoned leadership development consultant and coach and a cross-cultural expert, she brings over 20 years' experience to the table. Her focus? Nurturing leaders who recognize the immense value of their diverse backgrounds. Alejandra is striving through all of her work to help a growing demographic of workers and leaders, Hispanics that represent 30% of the construction workers in America. When leaders proactively explore new approaches, seek support to foster inclusive work environments, and embrace innovative ways of doing things, they gain a significant competitive advantage. But it doesn't stop there. When leaders genuinely care about their employees, this commitment reverberates throughout their organization, impacting revenue, profit, and branding positively. In essence, these forward-thinking leaders are not just ahead of the curve, they're thousands of miles ahead of the game. Their impact is tangible, and it resonates across every facet of their business. This is the place that Alejandra does her work. Alejandra, welcome to the Soft as Steel podcast.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be here with you today.
Good. I hope you feel the same way at the conclusion of our interview.
We'll see. I'll let you know.
Yeah, good. And thinking about our first conversation, as I did, I think I mentioned to you that the first thing that caused me to pause and take a look more closely at who you are and what you do on LinkedIn, which I think we mutually agree is a very interesting marketplace to present ourselves to potential clients and to people that are of like mind, that share thoughts with each other. There was a picture, and the picture was you standing next to the woman owner of a contracting company. And as we talked, I learned that construction is not your main industry of focus, although you do have background in it. And obviously, you visited and talked with a woman leader in construction. So you have an immediate sense of something which is impacting the industry that I have spent 40 years in terms of looking at and trying to find, develop, retain, and cultivate all kinds of people. You've heard my previous episodes, and you know that I focus around four pillars, which I think we can have an interesting conversation around based on what you said. One is love. And we talked a bit about that in our initial conversation, but that's something that I talk about in the sense of it being something which takes to a higher level. Whatever it is that we're engaged in takes it to a higher level and simply reminds us that in order to be able to do it well, you have to have energy, and love generates energy, as my mentor would say. The second is inclusion. Again, we talk about differences, we talk about diversity. DEI is still a buzz term that has still practical, active, and usable meaning. Some people have tried in the last, maybe 6 months or so to start to push, we don't need to be talking about that DEI stuff anymore. Well, we certainly do, and I know that you believe that and talk about it every day. The third element is social justice, which also includes within it dealing with individuals that are different in other ways, but also recognizing the fundamental importance of equality. Equal access to opportunities is what inclusion is all about. Social justice says, it's for everybody. And it also rolls in something else, which is a big issue, and for the demographics that you have a lot of involvement with a particular issue, and that is issues associated with mental health, addiction, suicide, et cetera. And the last is leadership. And so you work with leaders. You're a leader mm-hmm. yourself. You're a thought leader in industry, particularly around, the whole precarious balance that you deal with when you introduce, into another difference, cultural difference, which usually is signaled with, and for 30% of our workforce, is signaled with a language difference, which people treat in a variety of ways, particularly folks in my generation. And you talk about care, and you talk about valuing people. Those are all the reasons, and connecting to some of, my tenets and my beliefs, why I thought it was really important for me to have a conversation with you. So let me start with this question. It jumps out to me as I look at what you talk about, the word care as it relates to the outlook, attitude, and actions and words of a leader. Talk about that, and particularly as it relates to, I'll say, the extra measure of care that needs to be extended to deal with, in particular, the cultural differences.
Yes, Dennis, thank you. Thank you for that, for the introduction, for that preamble. But yes, I think that now that you mentioned, care is extremely, has been extremely important to me for during my whole career in many ways, right? For people caring about me, right? Seeing me as a whole person, seeing me for everything that I can contribute. And I appreciate when people do that and it's very noticeable. You can feel that. And I have felt and sensed that from many other people. But I also have sensed the opposite when people don't care. And that's also very visible and very obvious. In all my career, as I have worked with the Latinx community in many different forms and shapes, that idea of caring is central. A lot of the Latina community, I can't tell you how many times I have been told they don't care. They don't care. They don't care. It's a phrase that is repeated, because there seems to be a lack of caring, even though that the Latinx population is exploding, that we're growing tremendously, that we are a vital part of this country, economically speaking, in many other ways. There's a sense that we are invisible in many ways, that we are not as important as others, that we take a second place, that we are not cared for, that people don't care. And that's quite sad, because people, like I said, it's very obvious, it's very noticeable. And what is also very obvious and noticeable is when people care, when people show that others, especially people from different communities, when people can show, leaders and managers can show that they care about them, possibilities are enormous. Opportunities are enormous. That caring makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Trying to understand, making the effort to understand, making the effort to see beyond the surface, to see what is hidden there, trying to make those connections, those meaningful connections, can make a big, big difference. And I'm going to talk about leaders and managers, right? When they can learn how to show that care, when they can learn that that care is visible through actions, small and big actions, then beautiful things can happen. People react very positively when people care. There's open communication, there is motivation, there is better productivity, people are engaged, people are willing to commit, to go and do the extra things that they can do. So it's important to keep that in mind. And I think what I've learned, it's important to learn how to show it, right? It's not only enough to say it, but we have to show it with actions. And sometimes, I've also heard this, some people don't know exactly how to do it. Some people don't know how to go about making their daily actions that show that you care, that managers and leaders care. So yes, I think it's a critical pillar of everything. I think that it can really create wonderful things and it can be very visible, but when we have to learn how to do it. And also, you mentioned about cultural differences. There are differences. And that's some of the things that, of course, I do a lot of this, right? To make people understand that the way that we care can be very different across cultures. So you have to learn how to show that you care, right? In very visible actions. And also it's important to learn how to do this in ways that are acceptable, right? And understandable by other cultures. Because the way we care can be very different among different people, can be understood and interpreted very differently. So I think that is essential. And especially in an industry like the construction industry, that can be such a tough industry where the work needs to get done, regardless of how it gets done, then we have to put some extra effort in that understanding of how to show care.
Yeah. Right? You said a lot of really important, terrific things there. The first thing I jotted down was you mentioned this notion of the whole person. Mm-hmm. And that's something I talk about quite a bit because I suggest to leaders in the construction industry that one of the weaknesses in the process of developing people with their fullest potential is that in the construction trades, whether it's unionized or non-unionized, whoever is conducting or running apprenticeship programs, which is, let's call it the basic skill training for a construction worker in whatever the trade, they do an increasingly better job as days pass in teaching and ensuring that those apprentices have the basic skills and abilities. And that includes, as an example, being able to do very basic math. But then when you move into the actual tools of the trade, they do a good job of teaching them those things. They don't do a great job of teaching them the soft skills part of who they are, which is, again, is my term, as you know, to describe a person's qualities, behaviors, attributes, really a manifestation of what they value is what I describe as being soft skills. And that's the part that is the whole person ingredient. Hard skills are one thing, soft skills are something else. You need them both. But just to get in, just to begin to connect to the people that you are interested in and in showing that you can be a good worker for them, having some basic soft skills that you can demonstrate through your words and your actions, to me, are vital initial linkage. So that was the one thing I was glad. Mm-hmm. I'm going to phrase it this bluntly, and not in a bad way, but I'm really, it's been kind of on my mind, and that is this. As I was, you know, entering the workforce many, many years ago, a discussion at the time was to label individuals based on the language they spoke. So they referred to individuals as ESOL, English as a second language. And there were programs and initiatives to try to deal with that. And so, you know, what I wonder, even today, is if you think about different settings, different companies, if you have a company that's, and then construction, but I think in general, one of the beautiful traits of the United States of America is that this is a nation built with small businesses, you know, many, many small business entities, whether they're partnerships, corporations, whatever, there are many of those in number, many more of them than there are of the mega companies, the Fortune 500, et cetera, and they employ a lot of people. So I've kind of wondered around this notion, if you have a company that's owned, let's talk ownership, is owned by a white male, and in construction, that would be a common kind of a thing. And that white male is trying to get workers to perform projects for them. And what he's finding in the available pool of workers are individuals that speak Spanish. And so this, you know, this white owner is saying, the hell am I going to do with this? So that's one kind of picture. I like that you're getting a smile on your face. The other is what I want to see more and more of, and that is within what we generally would describe today, and I think constructively as underserved communities. When I think underserved, I think of women, I think of Hispanics, and I think of Blacks. You know, is three principal underserved communities in construction and in the economy in general. So if you have that Hispanic owner with Hispanic workers versus the company that has Hispanic workers and an owner that doesn't speak Spanish, how do you deal with the culture? You know, what do you tell the leaders that you're trying to convince that cross-cultural differences are not issues, are not obstacles, they're just something that tactically you need to figure out a way to get through it so you can get benefit of the available resources? Your thoughts?
Yeah, thank you for bringing that up. I think that we are getting more and more diverse, right? We're going to be, every year, we're going to be more and more diverse. For example, Generation Z kids are 49% are kids of color. And the next generation Alpha, 52% of those kids are kids of color. So that is going to be the reality of the years to come. We're going to have more and more diverse workforces. So it is, I think the first point that I always try to make across is to understand that this is not temporary. This is not in the meantime. We have to learn how to lead across cultures. That's going to be a reality. And it's not only in this country, but in the whole world. So I think it's very important to understand that we are going to have to start thinking and reframing our perspectives and saying and having that first question, okay, why have this reality? What am I going to do about this? And the first thing that I always ask, and we talk about cultural competency when we have to lead and learn how to lead across cultures, is to think about my disposition. That's my first question. What is your disposition towards this diversity? What is your willingness in order to learn, to understand more, to connect more? So what is your disposition? Because not everyone has a disposition of understanding different things or learning about different views. So that's a disposition. That is the first element that I always bring into the game. Does that mean that if you don't have it, that's it? You cannot do anything about that? No, of course not. That means that you can be aware of that, aware that, hey, maybe I have to think about me. Maybe I have to check my perspectives, my ideas, what I bring into the table. It always begins with us, Dennis, first. Mm-hmm. We have to check what we have within us first. Mm-hmm. People can get engaged in reflection to understand biases, to understand assumptions that we sometimes make, but the work always begins with us. Mm-hmm. When we conquer that, when we understand, hey, well, this is what I have, this might be some of the assumptions that I'm making, but I'm aware of those, right? I'm playing mm-hmm. with all the cards on the table. I know what I have. I know my triggers. I know what makes me upset. I know when I'm very aware of who I am, then I can respond instead of reacting, right? Then mm-hmm. I can go to the second step of being a culturally competent leader, that is learning. We have mm-hmm. to learn. There are many ways of learning. And one of the things when you talk about language differences is that it doesn't have to be only to learn the language, right? Because I'm still learning English. I've been in this country for 24 years. So learning a new language and being completely fluent, it might take some time. So we cannot wait for that. But you have to have the ability to, of course, use some of the Spanish if you can, right? Translate when possible. But more than that, and that is my big, big push, is to have the knowledge about how cultures are different. Because mm-hmm. everything we do, think about any skill that we do in the workplace, delegating, providing feedback, having one-on-one conversations, providing evaluations, everything that we do in the workplace, in construction or non-construction, like you said, is going to be impacted by culture. There are going to be some cultural nuances to that. So if we're aware of that and we try to learn about, okay, what about building trust? How can building trust be differently understood across cultures? Let me go and find out. Let me go and learn. Let me go and ask questions. Mm-hmm. Let me go and connect with other people and try to understand how do they see this building trust process, right? Mm-hmm. That might be different than me. Then I'm one or two steps ahead, because mm-hmm. I have more extra that inside knowledge that can help me. And that is going to be so appreciated by others when you make the effort to understand not only the language, that is amazing if you want to learn the language, but the cultural nuances that are definitely more abstract, definitely less concrete than language, right? That verbs and nouns, but that are essential to be able to connect and to have relationships. So yes, it is. It's not going to change. Like you said, construction workers, more than 30% are Hispanic, and it's only going to continue like that, right? Mm-hmm. And in order to have effective leaders who can lead effectively across cultural differences, we have to have that disposition to understand more about ourselves, right? What can be our challenges? Mm-hmm. And then have knowledge. And also to be mindful, to have that emotional intelligence, to understand that very likely because we're human beings, when we are faced with difference, when we are faced with things that are different than what we're used to, we're going to have some kind of emotional reaction. We're mm-hmm. going to pause. We're going to be scared. We're going to be surprised. But if we are mindful, if we understand that, we're going to be able to control that, right? Be able to edit that, pause before any mm-hmm. kind of reaction. And all those elements are going to help you to be a better culturally competent leader that can really leverage the talents of a diverse workforce. And specifically mm-hmm. speaking, of course, because that's my area of the Latino workforce.
Right. You said, again, another swath of really important, interesting things, and I'll pull two of them out. One is you were kind of talking around in a really understandable way, frankly. You were kind of talking around the notion of what bias is all about. You know, bias, as we both understand it, is dangerous because we develop bias without consciously knowing it's happening. And it starts happening to us in the very early years of our life when we are simply experiencing what our household was like, what our parents parents were like, what our friends, with our siblings, all the, you know, the community we lived in, you know, what our parents did, what they did to socialize, just the whole plethora of living a life. And living a life, you know, one of the things that, again, around the notion of bias, one of the biases, I mentioned a generational bias and then a cultural bias. One of the generational biases I really get a kick out of, and I have fun yelling at people when I'm teaching classes to show them how ridiculous this bias is the bias that is created for some time, although it's kind of now broadening a bit, and that is the friction between millennials and baby boomers. With the bias to baby boomers is the millennials are lazy, they're not hard workers, they're not this, they're not that. And then I flip over and I talk about a bias, in a sense, it is a bias, but it's a recognition of a quality that a cultural group has, and that is Hispanics. Again, one of the words you hear describe Hispanic workers, they're hard workers. You know, they arrive on the job, they do the job, they work very hard, they don't ask for a lot, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's an interesting dilemma. And the only thing that makes it kind of interesting, and maybe I might offer this as a thought about transition. We may be in a transition where, again, we are human beings. I think I'm safe in saying that. Occasionally I meet a person that I wonder about. But we are human beings. We are people. And the way we go about living our lives is by experiencing things, learning things, doing things by ourselves and with others. And the others part is important because our life is not lived in a vacuum. We live in an environment. It is where we live. It is what we do. It is the people we're associated with. And in order for us to be successful in our work, which everybody has to work in some way, and then also in our social lives to enjoy some happiness, is by using our qualities, relying on our qualities to begin and develop relationships with others. And relationship building, to me, is paramount. If you can't successfully build relationships, you're going to have a lonely and a very difficult life. But where that starts, to go back to the other thing you said, which I agree wholeheartedly, enthusiastically, is around the thought that any of this we're talking about all starts with understanding of yourself, starts with you. How well do you know you? Can you articulate what both your strengths and your weaknesses are, the things that you enjoy, the things you don't enjoy? Can you be honest with yourself? Because other people see who you are, your thoughts.
Yes, totally. And I, like I said, it always begins with us, right? It always begins with us. And as I work with leaders and I do leadership development, it's always the first conversation is about us getting to know ourselves. And getting to know ourselves, which can sound like a cliche, and people say it all the time, and we talk about self-awareness, but it's going beyond the surface. It's really going and deep down understanding what is it that drives us, what motivates us, and what is going to trigger us. But I think it's the most important thing. I think it's what is going to trigger. What are the thoughts that sometimes are in ourselves that we don't even know? Thoughts, ideas, beliefs that we cannot even brought to the surface that we don't even know, and you cannot work, you cannot control, you cannot tame something that you don't know, right? Once you can name it, you can tame it, whatever it is. Once you can name the thought, once you can name the idea, the belief, whatever it is, right? Then you can tame it. Because if you have to, right, in regards to leadership development and in regards of the construction and many things, it's like these beliefs, this thought that profit is number one, or I have to make sure that people see me as the boss, or I mean, there are many of these thoughts that are sometimes, like I said, very at a subconscious level, right, that are not very clearly explicitly stated, but are there. And once we have a thought like that, whatever it is, right, regarding whatever it is, then that is going to bring an emotion. There's always first a thought, then we have an emotion with that. The emotion can be fear, apprehension, anxiety, right? Leaders have those emotions all the time. They're concerned, they're anxious of finishing on time, deadlines, budgets, all that, right? And comes that those emotions come from those thoughts. And those thoughts are that I have to be the best. I have to show that I can do this. I have to show that I control this, right? So you have the thought, and then you have the emotion, and then you have an action. All the actions are product of those emotions, the fear, the anxiety, and that is proud at the thought. So when we talk about leadership, when we're talking about leading across cultural differences, we have to also keep that in mind all the time. What are the thoughts that I have about cultural differences? And I have felt it. I'm an expert in cultural, cross-cultural leadership development. And I have felt in every cell of my body how when I'm faced with difference, I have these reactions. And I'm pretty sure they're connected to very deep thoughts about like, oh, this is not supposed to be this way. We don't do things this way. Right. And then that is that thought that it's not very clear, but there's something, it's a thought there that had this emotion like, fear, no. And then I have an action. I don't do it, or I do it too much or something, right? But I think it's essential. It is essential to keep that in mind and that to understand ourselves. Because also, very importantly, when we understand ourselves, then we can understand others. We have the skills to get to know others. And when we get to know others, then we can do what you were talking about. We can develop these deep connections. We can develop authentic, meaningful connections. And when we do that, then is when we can lead with trust, with empathy, right? So,
yeah.
And I'm assuming, and I can ask you because you might know more about this, but that is hard to do in a industry that is such a tough industry like the construction, right? There is no time to stop and think about thoughts and empathy and authentic connections because we have to get the project done, right? We have to do it. And that's kind of my quest in this life, to be able to show that all these things are learnable. We can learn how to develop these skills, even in tough industries, as they might be called, like the construction industry. We can learn how to do this.
Yeah, very much so. Absolutely. I loved your phrase. Once you can name it, you can tame it. I think that's beautiful. A younger, not that young, but a younger woman leader in one of the unions that I do some work with, her phrase in terms of just trying to promote women in the industry is to say that see it, you can be it. If you can see it, you can be it. That's a reference to looking at, you know, the pathways and opportunities for women specifically in the industry. But in general, that thought kind of applies to anybody. This conversation is delightful and very informative. So thank you so much for it. You know, one of the things that I'm getting, some people will say, and it may be a bias of sorts, but when they talk about Latina Hispanic culture, you think of things immediately like warmth and celebration and great food and big families and, you know, all those kinds of things, which are all wonderful images. I'm going to see them firsthand in a couple of weeks when I visit Madrid and Barcelona for a vacation. I'll give you a report back.
Oh, but perfect.
There's so many reasons in the basis and the basics of humanity for us to be able to find a path together than there are real obstacles. And I think the challenge, and again, I'm interested in your perspective, I think the challenge in dealing specifically in this cross-cultural environment, again, 30% of the workforce is a big number. It's a big number, and it's growing steadily. I think it grew like 10% in just a very few years. It was 20% and it was up to 30%. That's 2022, so it's grown even more since then. But I think we can't excuse ourselves as leaders from not trying to, and that's why I think my words kind of work in terms of vocabulary. Every person deserves the opportunity to be able to enter into and pursue a career, enter into and simply have a job in order to take care of their family. And if we continue as a society to exclude anybody, and in the construction industry in particular, but in many industries, if we exclude women, if we exclude other minorities, underserved communities, we're dropping the pool of prospective new workers. If we have biases around color, when you've cited the statistic about Zs and alphas, 49 and 52%, I mean, those are huge numbers. And if we can't get to a place where the dialogue is built on a foundation of mutual respect and an interest in getting to know a person before you make a decision about who that person is or whether that person is someone you want to have a relationship with, it takes patience, which when you take that look at yourself in the mirror, if one of your qualities is not being patient, and it doesn't mean that you're a meaner. But again, if you're honest about yourself and your certain behavioral or personality style, patience may not be your virtue. And that may be something which causes you difficulties where your heart and your mind and every other aspect of you is in the right place, but you got that one little ingredient that if you name it and you're willing to put the work in, you can do something. That's called self-management. It's pretty straightforward, but difficult to do. The only person we can control our lives, and you know this is mm-hmm. very well, is ourselves. Mm-hmm. But many of us have gone through many years of our lives out of control. You know, what do you think?
I call that out of control. I usually, when I talk about cultural competency, I call that when we are in our cultural cruise control. We yeah. are just in one way, right? At one speed, one cultural cruise control. And yeah. that is what required the mindfulness to stop that, right? To say, no, I'm not going to go and only that with no, not seeing, right? In that cultural cruise control, I have to really stop and see what else, right? And all this is, of course, it's for social justice, and of course, it's for inclusion and for equity, but it's also because we have a lot of research that says that teams are more effective when they're inclusive and when they are diverse and when they're equitable. Yes. It's in benefit for all of us. I'm a foreigner. I came to this country as a student. And mm-hmm. I am completely grateful to this country for the opportunities and for the immense access and resources that I've had. And I think it's my responsibility to give back, to give back to this country and to help leaders understand that when they can become more conscious, when they can become more culturally competent, more inclusive, the organizations are only going to bloom. They're going to get yes. better and better. And it will mean that you have to stop your cultural cruise control, right? And it might mean that you might have to kind of go around and look around and learn different ways and understand, hey, well, maybe there's this different way of doing things so I can leverage the potential of the mm-hmm. Latino and Latina workforce and that I have at my disposal. There might be ways that I can think about this differently. And this is only going to be in benefit of your organization, right? I mean, it's of course, there are benefits, like I said, social justice and things like that, but it's also going to be the benefit of the organization. I've seen when people start asking questions, when people getting connected with others at a different level, it opens beauty. It opens beauty. Things get mm-hmm. much better. People are more engaged. They want to go to work. They are a lot of these beautiful things happen. Mm-hmm. In that, like one of the leaders that I work with, this woman who's a woman owner of this construction company, and she has learned how to sit down and connect with her people. And mm-hmm. she doesn't speak Spanish, and some mm-hmm. of them don't speak English. But there's some translation going on there and something like that. We can find ways to do that. But mm-hmm. the effort of her sitting down at the table and eating with them and asking questions about their lives, asking questions about their lived experiences, even though you have to have a translator in the middle, it is something mm-hmm. that is priceless and that I know she has her team doing beautiful things because good. Somebody took the time, the effort to work on her disposition, to work on her knowledge, on her mindfulness, mm-hmm. right? And then do the specific actions to show that she cares. So yes, I think it's not only because we want to talk about inclusion, it's because it works. It's fantastic. Yeah. And I believe that the construction industry, I'm a newcomer to the construction industry. I have a lot of experience teaching adults in adult learning. Mm-hmm. I trained thousands of people and mm-hmm. the construction industry is new to me. I learned about it or I started working with them about a year ago and I have fallen in love with it because it's real. It's hands-on.
Oh, it's real. Oh, yeah.
Honest people sweating and working with their hands, with their effort, with their bodies, with their energy. Mm-hmm. And that is It's such a real and honest profession. It's a people's profession that I can only see the magic that could happen if we could bring more of this cultural competency to the leaders.
And you can help them do it. Alejandra, yeah. This was a wonderful conversation. It's too short, although we're over time. I'm probably going to get in trouble with my producer. But thank you so much for taking your time. I look forward to listening to this conversation when we finish the editing process in the next few weeks. And we'll be back in touch and talk some more. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thanks for joining us today for this episode of the Softest Steel Podcast with your host, Dennis Duran. Dennis is the author of Softest Steel and a leading speaker and trainer for organizations across many industries and verticals. To learn more about the work Dennis is doing to activate soft skills in the workplace, contact him at DennisDuranSpeaking.com. Be sure to check out his book, Softest Steel, on Amazon or wherever books are sold. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or wherever you'd like to get your podcasts. And please remember to share this episode with your friends, colleagues, and anyone you feel would benefit from the conversation. We'll see you next time on the Softest Steel Podcast with Dennis Duran.
Produced by Audavita Studios. Connect your voice to the world.